Hey, good afternoon, everybody. And if there are any sports fans here, good afternoon to you, too. The topic is the future of fandom is on-chain, previewing blockchain's role in sports and media. My name is John Kosner. During the Dream Team era, I was in charge of broadcasting for the National Basketball Association. So for any of you who watched the Michael Jordan documentary, I was at most of those games. That was my era. In those days, it was also a dream for us to have somebody with the background and job description and talent of my colleague, SM Harris. SM is now into his second year as senior lead product manager for platform R&D for the NBA. Previously, he was strategic research manager at Major League Baseball. He's a graduate of UMass Amherst and is now pursuing a graduate degree in philosophy and history here at City University. And he's a lifelong Knicks fan. So Essam, how did you get involved in blockchain and other emerging technologies in sports?
Yeah, I mean, if you spent enough time around nerd culture forums in the late, aughts and early teens, you kind of knew about Bitcoin. Shout out to my guidance counselor who told me that playing World of Warcraft would never lead to anything in life. I read the Ethereum yellow paper in I think it was 2015.
Is it yellow paper or white? Is it yellow paper or white paper?
The yellow paper. Okay. They're both good. So I was generally aware of efforts to take the philosophy of blockchain and productize into something that consumers use. But I was actually a bit of a skeptic for a while, not really of the utility, but of the need for it. And then, 2016 happened. I think we all got a really rude awakening about digital privacy. And so, I started to poke around in blockchain to see, if it could, realize some of the promise that it had in terms of wresting our personal data from centralized companies. I ended up in Filecoin mining, if anybody else was part of that, ICO craze. And then around the same time, I think, started to connect the dots between what the future of machine learning was, augmented reality, virtual reality, how those things were going to impact privacy. And, then it became really clear to me, the role that blockchain was going to play in sort of creating a more healthy ecosystem for consumers.
So we say provocatively, the future of fandom is on chain. Why?
Yeah. Let me try to tell this story through my own journey as a Knicks fan. First of all, do we have any Knicks fans? Okay, we got a couple. I like it. So I'll see you on Saturday.
You didn't say long suffering, right?
Well, I'm getting to that. If you're not a Knicks fan, you're not paying attention to basketball. So the Knicks just finished the season 12 games above 500, 47-35. We finally have this long-term core in Brunson, Randall, and Robinson. They reached the playoffs in 2021, but I think everybody, all fans, including myself, kind of anticipated an early exit, and a lot of analysts correctly predicted sort of a regression in the next year. So this year is definitely different. Not only do the Knicks look like they can create some damage in the playoffs, but as we're going into the offseason, there are a lot of, anticipated moves, and we're even more optimistic about the future. And if you read The Athletic, Fred Katz actually had a great article about how the Knicks are sort of ahead of schedule in many ways in that rebuild. I'm wearing my Knicks cap around the city. I bought a Quickley jersey. I have a lot of pride in the team's current success. But I also, remember the tough times. So twice in the last decade, the Knicks have finished an NBA worst 17-65. Top players avoided signing here. Going to Madison Square Garden for those games or watching the other ones on TV was sort of, a weekly test of faith. So whether, you identify with my personal journey with the New York Knicks, if you're a Philly fan who fought to trust the process, if you're a Warriors fan who went through the rise and fall of their dynasty, the feeling of team pride in both good times and bad is one of the most common, fan affinities that we have. And we know for a majority of us that Sharing those highs and lows with others is among the first social connections that we make outside of family and neighbors, and really a primary way that we maintain them over time.
So we're in an era now that we had some breakthrough products, including two that involve the NBA, you know, NBA Top Shot and the So Rare Fantasy game. Mm-hmm. When you think about, you know, and those products got started quickly and they sort of leveled off, and there's more going on. But when you think about the path between sort of where we are today and this future of more integration on chain, what are the mm-hmm. kinds of things that come to mind?
Yeah, well, it's important to note that, you know, the phenomenon I'm talking about when it comes to fandom is not specific to sports. You know, consumers are hungry for long-term investments that they can make in the entertainment space. And I think, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a really classic example. Game of Thrones, another one. You know, what makes these 15-year fan journeys that people go on really sticky, you know, they draw us in with, you know, world-class storytelling and fantastic cinematography, something that's also, as you know, very common to sports. But what we stay for are the social experiences that come along the way. So if you're interacting with people on Twitter, you're commenting on Reddit, you're writing memes, you're, even your dating profile prompts, the conversations that you have with somebody in your office that's 10 departments away from you, the core of that feeling is that, you know, we seek to join stable communities of shared interests. And I think that, you know, ultimately the question is, you know, how do you productize that view of the social origins of fandom? And I think, you know, taking it to another realm of entertainment, Spotify being a great example with their Wrapped product. So I take a lot of pride in trolling the depths of new releases to find artists, you know, before they're going to be big. Some of you out there might take a lot of pride in like showing off that you're in the top, you know, 1% of Taylor Swift listeners. But, you know, really, no matter what the reason that we have for enjoying that experience and finding it compelling, the fact is that like our sports fandom, like our chosen set of entertainment franchises, these things say a lot about who we are today. And when we reflect back on them, they say a lot about who we used to be. And so before you can join those communities of shared interests, you know, things like Spotify Wrapped really help clarify for you what those interests are and were.
So we were talking this week, there was a really terrific article by Li Jin, who is an investor, and it's called Building Psychological Attachment, Not Just Ownership into Web3. It's on Substack, author's last name is J-I-N. Do you subscribe to that? Because she listed Spotify Wrapped as sort of an example of, you know, you don't actually own anything, but your investment in the product is what really creates that bond.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's where blockchain comes in to be uniquely equipped to push this concept of the social origins of fandom forward. It's important for me as somebody who, you know, works at the NBA, but also as a sports fan to say, you know, we own our fandom, right? I attend the games and watch the games and buy the jerseys. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, you know, you're watching the show and buying the merchandise. You know, if you identify with the Spotify example, you're the one listening to the music, building that library and going to the concerts. So we're the ones sending the texts. We're the ones talking with friends and family. And I think, you know, when you look at when it comes to blockchain, you have sort of the tokens and then you have credentials, you know, two kind of broad-based concepts for how to decentralize some of that data. What you find there, I think, is a way for both you as an individual and the enterprise that makes that experience available to you to do that in a mutually beneficial way.
So let's talk about two big challenges, okay? Usability for one and utility.
Yeah, usability. So about 6 weeks ago, you had the Ethereum Foundation or a group of researchers, launched the ERC 4337 smart contract to their mainnet. And I think there's really like two pieces of that. One is kind of like a practical implication, and then there's a philosophical one. The practical implication for us really hasn't manifested itself yet because the, you know, it's just the standard, and I think over the next 12 to 24 months, we're gonna have to wait and see what, you know, wallet service providers and other entities do with that. But sort of the philosophical thing, we've heard a lot of the people on this stage, and as I've gone around the panels, I've heard it there too. The philosophical thing there is that, you know, the idea that people are going to, you know, memorize a 12-word passphrase.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. That they're going to manage, you know, a dozen wallets across different services. It's not going to happen. I'm forgetting, I apologize if you're out there, I'm kind of stealing this, but, you know, the idea that you can have this, like, irreversible scam transaction happen to you. It's just not workable. These are things that are going to, you know, permanently eject people from our ecosystem. And so the philosophy there is basically that, you know, we are going to understand, and I hate saying this because I really don't like the term Web 2.5, but we're going to understand.
I used it this morning, so you'll forgive me.
Well, I recognize the value, but I think just the broad strokes of that, you know, there are user experience conventions for a reason that have made some of these products so popular. If blockchain technology companies and builders are not aware of those challenges, adoption will not happen. And also say, you know, it, really important for everybody who's like, I guess here, because we're in a down moment, right? So everybody who's here is kind of, you know, in many ways a true believer maybe still. These challenges are existential for blockchain technology. And what that means is that, you know, it puts blockchain technology in a place where it's not inevitable. It sits in a competitive environment with the digital wallets that will come from Apple, that will come from Google, Amazon. If those companies come up with a better solution, a more seamless solution, a more mobile-friendly solution, they're going to win, and blockchain will fall by the wayside.
So, want to open it up to some questions? If anyone in the audience has a question, anybody?
I didn't have enough hot takes.
Okay. Could you just speak up a little bit? I'm sorry.
Can't hear you, sorry. Happy to give you a mic.
So the question is, have we attempted to expand our brand from either Twitter or crypto Twitter? So SNO is the SNO is what crypto Twitter is.
Oh, I apologize.
I'm an excellent new user, I would say, expert. Will you please say, just feel comfortable?
Basically,
the people who really adopted the technology are gathering together in Twitter spaces to discuss how to advance the space from the technological aspect, from the community building aspect. And they're willing to listen to good ideas and help brands or companies to integrate seamlessly in the ecosystem.
Okay, I'll let ask them. Okay, thank you.
Well, first of all, I love crypto Twitter. I spend way too much time on it. Oh, can we make sure that she gets off the stage safely? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thinking about ideas that can really push crypto forward and make it a place, blockchain technology, make it something that's truly useful for consumers. Let me take a moment to maybe talk a little bit about zero knowledge.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of very serious efforts to bring zero knowledge technology into the mainstream. So if you look at the recent partnership that was struck between Polygon and Immutable, the MENA protocol has a really interesting idea about a zero knowledge chain that's really minimized, so it doesn't take that much space to be a validator. If you don't know what zero knowledge is, you can kind of summarize it by just saying, if you sign up for an app or service that needs to know that you're 18, needs to know that you're 18 years of age or older in order to sign up for it. And they ask you your birthday. The point is, they don't actually need to know your birthday. What they need to know is that you are 18 years or older. The broad stroke of zero knowledge technology can do is that if you have something like a digital driver's license, which is something that they're trialing now in California, or some other form of identification, that your blockchain wallet ought to be able to communicate with that service and in a verified, trustable way, say to that service, this person is over the age of 18, without giving the birthday or even necessarily how old you actually are. To me, this seems like one of the key things that blockchain technology needs to productize and bring to consumers as a differentiation from centralized services, because if we don't have user control of their own data by default, right? Not to assume that you want to give more data or that you should give more data than is absolutely necessary. If I can just give like a quick plug, talking about crypto Twitter, one of the really leading voices on this, Evan McMullen, she runs a company called disco.xyz. Would definitely recommend that you go and check that out. But I think she's been like a true leader on the idea that, maybe a little counterintuitive for the title of the panel here, that, you are not going to want all of your data on chain. You may want to be able to access it and leverage it for on-chain services, but there are a lot of things that that you don't want to have searchable on-chain. And so that's something that we think a lot about at the MBA, which is not just how to implement like blockchain technology or make NFTs or so on and so forth, but this is first and foremost a privacy technology, and obviously we care very deeply about fan privacy, and I think this is a really interesting way to teach everyday consumers the unique selling point, what some of the unique selling points are for blockchain technology.
So we've seen recently just the explosion of these AI chat GPT engines, and it's rumored that in June Apple's going to come out with a mixed reality headset of some form. What do you think about the interaction between blockchain technology and AI and XR, just as it relates to sort of fan experience here?
Yeah. I'll give my hot take, I guess, in this, which is that a future where there is generative AI but not blockchain technology is probably the epitome of like whatever dystopian science fiction novel you can think of. There are really key things, and this is kind of why my personal view is that you take blockchain, artificial intelligence, and the broad strokes of augmented mix and virtual reality, and think of them as inextricably linked, co-evolving technologies, where the functionality of one supports and brings new use cases in others. So when you think about, and other people on this stage have highlighted it, talking about provenance, just knowing, when we have an internet where so much of what you see is going to be computationally generated, your ability to understand where something came from is going to be critically important. I think this is probably one of the quickest things that blockchain will do to adapt to artificial intelligence is through that concept of provenance, whether it's tokenization or credentials. You know, that's for all the builders in the audience to figure out, and for organizations like the NBA to see your success and then adopt it. But even getting back to that conversation around zero knowledge, right? Privacy by default, user control by default, making sure that, you know, when you put data out into the out into a cloud server or so on and so forth, when you get that Apple headset that's tracking, skeletal tracking your hands, and even my Quest 2 at home, and the Quest Pro has these like really advanced ways of like tracking your body movements as you're using it, and those make those devices really fun, right? And really interesting to use, and why those entertainment experiences on those devices are really compelling for us. But we also have to recognize that in this age of generative AI, that data, which is going to be part of the same data sets that your consumer and attitudinal and behavioral data sets were in like the quote unquote Web 2 world, that falling outside of your control is a troubling future. And so I would hope that folks in both disciplines would realize that they need each other, and the future of both is much better when they build together.
On a more optimistic topic, when you go to the game on Saturday, mm-hmm. do you imagine a world where all of a sudden, the Garden is going to know you're there, and there's a history of like there's this resurgence of Knicks basketball. There's a championship in the offing. Do you think that this technology can sort of elevate what that experience is? So if you go back for the next playoff or playoffs after that, there's going to be like a history of SM at the games.
Yeah, so I think this kind of gets back to what we were talking about in terms of like owning your fandom, right? It's like once you own it, and this technology through this technology stack, you can prove it, and then you can make it composable with other apps, services, and experiences. So,
and by composable, yeah. You mean?
Yeah. So let me actually define that in a way through an example. Right. This is kind of my dream. First of all, the dream is, I'm at a New York City bar with a bunch of other Knicks fans who have long suffered through those 17 and 65 seasons. We watch the games. We can prove it. We have the digital ticket stubs. We have the moments in our wallet. And there's a bar in New York City who has the technology to say to verify your ownership of those tokens and those credentials. And that's how you get into that event. So I can sit with those other fans who have suffered with me, right? And then, we see Randall hit the game-winning, game seven buzzer beater winner shot in the finals. And I'm really dreaming about that, and I believe that it can happen. Then, when we were talking about composability, not just in like the very specific definition that it might have in the blockchain community of, being able to fork something and program over it and add to the contract, but getting back to that theory of the social origin of fandom, being able to do something as simple as say, okay, you met that criteria, you came to the event, you saw this emergent social environment that we created out of this technology. I'm going to give you a PoOP or some other token or credential.
And a PoOP is?
Yeah, the PoOP, if you definitely check out PoOP.xyz, proof of attendance protocol. It's a common token for those kinds of things. And maybe the bar owner says in the off season you come back and show that PoOP or that token or that credential, and 10% off every bill you have in the off season. And that's a loyalty program that you can put in to get people to come back to what is essentially a Knicks sports bar during the off season. So what we really want to do here with tokens and credentials, we don't want to make NFTs. What we want to do is use this technology to support and enable our fans to build those emergent social experiences, the ones that make those 15-year fan journeys, the 30-year fan journeys, the ones where you suffer through the 17 and 65 season, the one where you have the joy of the, you know, the 47 and 35 season with the Knicks winning the finals this year, you know, that you can have pride in both, in going through both those experiences, and you can share them with your fellow fans.
So thank you, Essam. Also learned something about crypto Twitter today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And we also have